What's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of First Pitch 305. I'm your host, Alex Aguirre, and in this episode, we're not going to get into that ugly, horrific, bad, just speechless.
We're going to have some fun.
We're going to try to have a fun episode. We're not going to get into what's going on the field right now with the Marlins. I can't speak right now, the way they're playing. So we're going to get away from that, get into some fun, off-topic Marlins news. And joining us as well is Gabe, Gabriel Garcia. I love the hat. Little shout out to Jazz and his grand slam.
Yes, sir. The only thing that went right today, apparently.
Well, not even they gave up the 5-run lead. Whatever. The point is, guys, we're going to not
have fun. Having fun.
Have fun. And the reason why we're doing this episode is because FanDuel came out with a graphic, and they came out with a selection of the greatest of all time players per MLB franchise. As you guys can see here for our viewers, Edwin pulled up a graphic from FanDuel, and let's take a look at the Marlins pick. Gabe, Edwin, it's Hanley Ramirez. That is that is the greatest of all time. That is the GOAT for the Miami/Florida Marlins, according to FanDuel.
According to FanDuel,
So this is what our episode is all about, guys. We're going to talk about, first off, if this selection is even correct, or do we even agree with this? And probably not, obviously, based off how we're, how we sound. But and then we're going to give our takes and our picks as who we think is the greatest of all time for the Miami/Florida Marlins. So, and this go down through this list as well. And Edwin, anything that catches your eye or any players that catches your eye is like, are they really the greatest of all time for that franchise?
I'm looking at it and I feel like they're pretty solid. All the picks here. I noticed there is a lack of a Nolan Ryan on any of these teams, which definitely seems like these people knew what they were doing up until the Marlins selection. I feel like there's no repeats. So there's no guys as like the best on two franchises. So, but everybody else looks to be pretty accurate. I mean, Babe Ruth, you got your Honus Wagner, Honus Wagner, Roberto Clemente, I'd probably, have a fight there for the Pirates one, but I could see for sure. Why, yeah. Stan Musial, Albert Pujols, I mean, flip a coin. Looking at it though, I'd say the next most questionable one here, and maybe you guys feel differently, but I think the next most questionable one here is Max Scherzer. Is he the best National? Like, are we omitting the Expos history here? Yeah. If it's strictly Washington and no Expos history, then is Max Scherzer still the best National Strasburg ever? I don't know. I would think Strasburg above
Ryan
above,
Zimmerman.
Zimmerman was there.
I'd go with Ryan Zimmerman, and then Strasburg would be the honorable mention.
Yeah, I think that'd be a little suspect one there, but all the other ones look pretty good. All the other ones, I feel like, those are pretty accurate. Todd Helton, I was thinking, well, maybe Larry Walker, but I think in the end, Todd Helton did have longevity, a little longer career up in. Yeah. So, yeah, I think everybody's pretty good there. Everybody's pretty solid. So, no complaints on the rest, but I think there's a discussion to be had about this Marlins pick. I definitely think, and I'm curious to see what you guys think if you agree with that, or if you guys got your own picks, because I got some guys and some names here, but I'll let you guys go.
Well, for sure, before we get into that, I just want to give what my takes on that list. If you can pull up that graphic again.
Go ahead.
Because I did a rundown of it, but something that stood out, I guess, that I didn't notice at first was the Phillies, Mike Schmidt. And I know he's a Hall of Famer. He's one of the greatest third basemen of all time, but you can kind of give an honorable mention to Jimmy Rollins and Chase Utley, because they were long tenured Phillies. Of course. I'm just saying.
I got it. How about Mike Schmidt? Mike Schmidt's a 500 home run guy. Like, I don't know how many gold gloves, and he won a chip. And he was a lifelong Philly. So, Philly. Like,
neither of them were Philly, Utley, or Jimmy Rollins. Two,
yeah.
But the rest of them, I agree with pretty much all the picks.
Yeah. Utley used to drive me crazy, bro. Utley, Jimmy Rollins, I liked. I liked watching him, but he was a Marlins killer. Utley was such a Marlins killer.
Ryan Zimmerman, the Marlins killer. But I would still put him above Masters.
Yeah. Gabe, what about you? You got any questions or any concerns when you look through this list?
Man, like I said before, I was wondering about Randy Johnson, but then every time I see King Griffey Jr., it's like, no, man. It's like you were saying, nobody can knock out King Griffey Jr., even though Randy Johnson. Man, when I think of the Mariners, I think of Randy Johnson. I keep forgetting that he plays for Arizona. But, no, I like the group.
Edgar Martinez as well. It's pretty solid.
I love the Big Hurt for the White Sox and Pete Rose for the Reds. And, yeah, I'm pretty much – I'm in agreement with the list, minus Hanley Ramirez.
Yeah, that's the biggest one. I mean, I guess – I don't know. Let's – like I guess we kind of gave our takes for this list, but let's dive in now to the Marlins pick, Hanley Ramirez. And, guys, you know, that was super surprising. They picked a player – mind you, the Marlins are one of the youngest teams in MLB right now, in the MLB, and they have two World Series. They didn't pick a player that was on neither – a World Series team, and I get it. The franchise has been through a lot of, you know, a handful of fire sales in a 30-year span, which is a lot, and it's terrible. But so that, like, in terms of having a fan favorite or a long tenure type of player, like a Mike Schmidt, for example, you know, you're not gonna find that here with the Marlins. So I get that part that already kind of like eliminates a lot of categories and a lot of stuff to pick a player. But there are off the top of our heads, we can pick a handful of players that are way, I guess, or had a way better, a way bigger impact
resume.
So let's start off here. I'm not going to lead it off. You guys are the guests on the show. So Edwin, Gabe, you guys take it away from here. Let's start off with Gabe. Like, you go with your pick. I know we have a couple each of us, but let's go with one at a time. Gabe, you set the table here.
All right, I'm gonna go in, as they say, chicks dig the long ball. So for me, it was Giancarlo Stanton.
All right,
completely, man. I mean, I think his best season as a Marlin was like 2017, and if I'm not mistaken, he hit 59 home runs, and it was like 132 ribbies, and he drew walks like crazy. What was it, 86 walks?
85 walks, yeah.
85 walks.
9 home runs, 132 RBIs, 281 batting average as well, which is, I think,
not bad.
The second highest, third highest in his career. Oh, no, fourth highest, excuse me, in his career. And so he's already in year 15 or year 16. So, yeah, it was that's definitely an MVP year right there.
Yeah, he was the 2017 NL MVP. And, I mean, the guy was good enough to get a contract that was, 13 years at $325 million? And I think that averaged about, $25 million per season. And then for, the at-bats, I think I read somewhere that it was, $154,000 per game. Sorry, not per at-bat, per game.
Something like that.
You know what it is to make $154,000 in one game? I think you could probably divide that up by four at-bats, and we could figure that out, that number, but – he played so well for the Marlins. He got the best contract in
North American sports at the time.
North American sports history. So, I mean, when they picked Hanley Ramirez, I was like, what?
Wait, hold on. But to be fair, the Marlins didn't pay any of that massive salary. It was all backloaded. So it was essentially the Yankees who are doing that contract. So we might be giving the Marlins too much credit there as far as, you know, what he accomplished, because he Marlins, I think the first couple of years of that deal were I think he was getting paid $20 million for two seasons or something like that. And then it just went ridiculously backloaded. So
yeah, Marlins were playing a little bit of 3D chess there, that once the contract back heavy, they unloaded him and they're like, well, that's going to be the Yankees problem from here on out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I got to agree. I think Stanton, when I think of who should it be, there's some names that pop up, and Stanton is definitely, he's got to be on the list. He's got to be, if he's not, 1A, 1B, he's up there. He's definitely in discussion for best Marlin of all time. But I do think there's something to be said about the fact that what you mentioned at the beginning, Alex, which is none of the guy who they picked never won a World Series. Stanton never won a World Series, and we have a couple of years here. So I kind of feel like, maybe there's somebody there that, kind of checks off a few more boxes there as far as a real Marlins legend, because we don't have much history. Yeah, we don't have much history in the history that we do have. You know, a lot of it goes around these two seasons, 97 and 03. So we kind of always will drift in and out of that. So Yeah, I think Stanton is a solid pick here. Solid pick.
And let's put in perspective here for our listeners as well. 1997 was the first World Series for this franchise. That was their first winning season. They were established in 1993. 2003 was their second World Series win. That was their second winning season as a franchise. 10 years in existence already at that time.
That's crazy.
Since 2003 to the year 2023, that's 20 years. They've had 2009, 2020. Five, because 2004 and 2005. Five winning seasons in 20 years. So there's not a lot of good times, not a lot of good, happy moments here, guys. And then in Giancarlo Stanton's tenure, which was, I believe, from 2010 to 2017, not a single winning record, not a single playoff appearance. So let's just to put a cap, I guess, on, I'm not trying to bash Stanton because Stanton is the franchise leader in home runs. He gave Marlins relevancy to a certain extent during his tenure in terms of notoriety. From a national perspective, winning the home run derby in San Diego, just being a power threat, and also hitting for somewhat average. He hit 270s and the 280s. And also he was on his way, just to give him some a pat on the back as well. He was on his way, or could have been on his way, to an MVP in 2014 before being hit by a pitch in the face in Milwaukee. Because if you look at his numbers prior to that game, he was in the top three or five, whatever, what you want to put it. He was in the conversation. It was already towards the back end of the season. There was about a month left. The Marlins were somewhat in a wild card race at the time. And then that just put a tailspin on the season.
He was second in the MVP that year.
There you go. So he, losing, I think, a month left in that season, so losing time, he was still having that type of historic run to win an MVP. So he did have, put up the numbers. If you want to go into the basketball category, he did stuff the stat sheet a little bit for a losing team, but it's different in baseball compared to basketball. But not a lot of winning was done during his time. Gabe, that is probably the top name that a lot of fans, or a lot of current or younger fans, would think of. So Edwin, you are next up on the line in the lineup. Who is your pick, or who do you think is the GOAT for the Marlins?
So I was tossing and turning this around, for a lot. And I started doing my research. I started doing my homework. And I did look at Stanton first. My first initial draw was Stanton. I looked at the numbers. And there was that, 8 years with the Marlins. Let me see. I have it here. What is this? Hold on. Oh, man, my eyes are not good at this time of day. 267 home runs, 672 RBIs, 268 batting average. Like, he checks off all those things. But you know what? I have to discount Stanton for the most is not just winning, but I feel like out of all the seasons that I've ever been a Marlin fan, his run was probably the most disappointing as a Marlins fan because of what, and it's not exclusive to him. I'm talking about the whole team as a whole. We had Christian Yelich. We had Stanton. We had Marcell Ozuna. We had JT Realmuto. We had some players. We had batting champ in D. Gordon. We had the best pitcher in baseball in Jose Fernandez. We had a lot of talent in those years and just couldn't even make one playoff appearance, And, hey, just looking back at that, that probably hurts probably even more than those losing seasons that we've had. So that's what kind of makes me a little resentful for going and making Stanton number one. But I started diving. I started thinking, all right, well, usual suspects, Miguel Cabrera, but five seasons only with the Marlins, I believe, was the number that I saw. Let me see here.
So five. What's that? Years,
yeah. 03 to 07, oh, 5 years.
Four and a half.
Then I was like, well, who balled out for a long time? I started looking at, some longevity guys. Then I found a name from 97 that I was like, all right, Gary Sheffield, first all-star moment. He checks off a lot of boxes. All-star moment, home runs, RBIs, batting average. That inaugural season, he was fighting for a triple crown, 93. He gave you everything, And the guy puts on for the Marlins because he said if he goes into the Hall of Fame, he's going to rock a Marlins hat. Yes, no doubt. Yeah. That was his. So there's another guy that I have as a B. but I think it has to be Sheffield. And because the other guy that I have there, I'm not gonna say his name because I want to see if maybe it's somebody that you mentioned. We can go over some honorable mentions, but sure. I think my choice has to be Sheffield. I started looking at pictures as well, but for me, Sheffield just embodied everything. He captures that nostalgia of yesteryear with the 90s, because you also associate Gary Sheffield in the beautiful teal, like what Gabe's wearing, and you know, with the nice old school Marlins look. So you have nice memories of him there. You have the championship run. You have what he did. The fact that he wants to be a Marlin, he wants to be inducted as a Hall of Famer. And come on, all of us here, Gabe, Alex, and myself, we've all gone to a batting cage. We've all grabbed a wrapping paper pole or whatever when we're doing wrapping gifts, and we've all done the Sheffield little, you know, batting stance where we're shaking the 100%. Bat like that, dude. That guy, yeah. Like, at the end of the day, everybody wanted to be Gary Sheffield when you were younger, and he wanted to be the guy for Miami. So I feel like those things together make him the GOAT. I have another guy who is, if you guys would have picked Sheffield first, that I would have made a case for. But I think if where I'm picking here in this draft here, I'm going with Sheffield as my number one guy.
So, Gabe, what do you think about that? What's your rebuttal? What's your take on that?
I mean, he makes a pretty good argument considering Stanton is sort of the personification of the disappointment that we had during the Marlins in that era. Because, like you said, we had tons of talent and zero to show for it. No playoff appearances, no nothing. Granted, we had the tragedy of losing Jose Fernandez. Imagine if he had not, you know, passed. Some people would say that it would have mattered. He would have just ended up on the Yankees or some other big market team. But we'll never know, frankly. And I remember there was an article that was written that the team would have been broken up sooner had it not been for the loss of Jose Fernandez. They delayed it by about a year out of respect of losing him. I think it might have been Samson or someone else that had mentioned that. But, yeah. I mean, it's Giancarlo Stanton. We had a guy there that was like a slugger in every sense of the word, like a classic heavy hitter. Because I remember, if I'm not mistaken, he had trouble, you know, hitting off like a, I don't know if it was the curve or the breaking ball. So pitchers
slider
started
down the way. Slider,
there we go. And pitchers started beating him that way. But man, if you left it hanging for too long, he would smash it. And
he
is the best cleanup hitter we've ever had in, like, I don't know, less 15-20 years, in my opinion, just because of the raw power that he brought. Raw power.
The funny thing is, Gabe, is that Mattingly used him in the two hole the last couple years of Stanton's tenure. But I get what you mean, though, in terms of just secure raw power and slugging, you know, just.
Yeah. If I ever needed someone as risky as it would be, if anyone ever told me, if the bases are loaded on a full count in the ninth inning with the game on the line at the time, who would you have at the plate? I'd say Stanton every time. He might strike out a lot, but all he has to do is get a hold of that ball, and it could be a grand slam or a double down the left field line. It doesn't matter. But
even
if
singles were over 100 miles an hour, they were just you don't want to get in the way of one of those line drives. You're an infielder. He had that power. He had that power, like, a big time. But for sure, greatest slugger of all time in franchise history. And the what if, though, because he constantly got hurt. Obviously, I mentioned the hit by pitch. You can't control that, getting hit in the face, something horrific like that. But he was still had, like, a long injury history. He finished with 267 home runs as a Marlin. If he just put together healthier seasons, he could have eclipsed the 300 mark. And obviously, his career still would have gone to New York. But still, though, it would have been just even the magnitude of that tenure with the Marlins would have been even greater. If he just stayed healthier, because he would have been way above 300 home runs, and that franchise record would have been just even greater to break. But I mean, you guys make two great arguments. Now, just, I guess, to bounce off Edwin's take with Gary Sheffield, if I were to choose between both of those guys, I would probably pick Sheffield because of that. I think of just the name power. You think, you know, Gary Sheffield, Giancarlo Stanton? I think that the name Gary Sheffield, people gravitate to that more. He checks off a lot of boxes. Edwin says in 1993, he hit a home run in the All-Star game that put the Marlins on the map. Like, they were just known as probably that team in teal down in South Florida, but that gave the Marlins some recognition in the early 90s. And then that he was a building block, a cornerstone. They traded for him in 93. They got rid of, not got rid of, but they traded Trevor Hoffman, no one, I guess, no one could expect to be the second greatest closer of all time. But, you know, looking back, well, like, you know, he, Gary Sheffield could have been, it was a good deal. The Marlins won a World Series out of it. Sheffield could have been, if they hadn't didn't have a fire sale, Sheffield could have had a longer career with the Marlins if they just wanted to keep that team together. But Sheffield also made the sacrifice of moving, changing positions. We talk about Jazz today and whatnot. He came in as the Marlins as a third baseman, and he was drafted as a middle infielder. So he made the sacrifice to go into the outfield and play right field when they started building that team. He was, like I said, it was a cornerstone. They started adding pieces, the development of Charles Johnson. Then they got Moises Alou, Bobby Bonilla, Devon White. You know, they started adding pieces little by little, and he decided to take a back seat, you know, in the lineup, but a back seat defensively to make room for these guys. So people forget about that.
He played good
in
the outfield. He played good. He made a great catch.
Yeah. Best World Series.
You know what I'm talking about? The World Series. Yeah. The World Series catch that he did at the wall. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man.
So he definitely has his moments defensively as well. So, that's why I kind of just lean. I just think of great moments, but he also has that postseason run. Giancarlo had never had that postseason run in Miami that we can gravitate to. We can just, like, you know, feel nostalgic about it because, you know, Sheffield did, and he was part of that first team, and we saw him grow with the team. So there's just a lot more emotional elements, I think, involved that also are translated into wins in a World Series for Sheffield. So I'm going to give that point to Edwin, I guess, if we're going to start tallying up points here. but both, you know, you can't go wrong with either pick. If you want to have a slugger in your lineup to build a World Series contender, you can't go wrong with either guy. You really can't.
Yeah.
But I think the man who personifies more the Marlins and has the chip at the end of the day, you got to go with Sheffield. And that's just me. So I'm going to break the tiebreaker here with that. But so going into, I guess, my pick, and then after the next round, we'll go our honorable mentions. To round things off for our picks of greatest of all times, I'm just going to go with the last slugger, I guess, or the last great hitter this franchise had, which is Miguel Cabrera. You know, if I were to pick an order of these three sluggers or these three hitters, it would probably be Sheffield, Cabrera, and Stanton in terms of GOATs.
Okay.
You know, because – and I give the slight edge to Miguel Cabrera because of just of the impact that he did make in that 0-3 run, because he could have easily just been a filler player, because when Lowell got injured, they called him up to play third base. And then they signed Jeff Conine as well. They made some moves as well, you know, just to fill in the gaps. And he could have been just a filler player for the time being, had a couple good hits here and there. But then McKeon sticking him into the middle of the lineup, hitting three hole, hitting cleanup, and for him to produce and then to do it in the World Series as well. Cabrera and Hideki Matsui are the first pair of rookies to hit cleanup in a World Series game, you know, and so like that stuff like that, like, he performed at the biggest stage at 20 years old, that home run off Roger Clemens, a 20-year veteran versus a 20-year-old kid, like that's storybook baseball fairy tale type of scenarios. So the mystique, I guess, of Cabrera is just great because of just his moments early on in his career and how he got called up. And this team was middling at 500. And then, you know, with Dontrell, Cabrera, they get called up, boost some youth, boost some life into this team, catapults them to the playoffs, and they went on this magical run. So that's the fun aspect with Cabrera. Then you start trickling in more into the Giancarlo Stanton type of conversation with after that 0-3 run, what else happened? Because they didn't have a fire sale right after 0-3. Let's remember here. They kept that core until 0-5. You know, so that Pierre Castillo, Derek Lee left in after the 0-3, and they got Hee-Seop Choi to replace him. But then they got Carlos Delgado in 0-5. So that core was still intact, and they were replenished that core as well. That core as well. They still had Pavano, Beckett, Brad Penny was there, and then he left after 0-4, or he left in 0-4. But they still, like, replenished that rotation with good names, and they went 83-79, I think, like in 0-4 and in 0-5. They had winning records, so it's better than Stanton. So that's why I give them the slight edge. They did finish winning records, but they just couldn't get it to the next level. And then in 05, they didn't make it to the playoffs. Then they had the fire sale. In 06, though, was a fun season. You had like more than half the roster with a bunch of rookies. And then, but that was just, it was just fun, you know. And he was the veteran as a 3-year player, which is him and Willis. So there was, years. That's the thing.
Yeah, yeah. And honestly, let me tell you, man, it was very difficult to put Sheffield over Miggy here, and it was mostly because of the fact that, you know, there was a little longevity, him wanting to be here, and that, you know, that nostalgia of the early 90s here when it comes to Sheffield. But right. Man, if just look at the four seasons, because he had four prime years with the Marlins, right? He had the rookie year where he came in, played 87 games. Then in the next four seasons, he averaged like 158 games, 159 games a season. So he wasn't hurt. He was healthy. At he hit 33, 33, 26, and 34 home runs, right? 119, 114, 116, 112 RBIs. And he batted 300 or 294 his first full season, but then 323, 339, and 320. Like, the guy literally did it all. All-star all four seasons with the Marlins. MVP top five two of those seasons. Silver Slugger two of those seasons. Like, golly, man. That 4-year run right there is better than any run of any one player in Marlins history. Put up those 4 years, that's even better than, because Sheffield didn't have the run like that. Sheffield had like a nice collection of work, but he didn't have a run like that. And Stan, well, he was also hurt in 97. Comes close. Yeah. Stan probably comes close with the run with the MVP seasons 14 and 17 and all that stuff. But man,
if he hadn't gotten injured, this might have been a different conversation when it comes to that kind of 4 years.
No, you can't go wrong with any of those guys. Cabrera's the best pure hitter of the three by far. Look, mm-hmm. as Edwin mentioned, look at that batting average. He's gonna give you 310 to 330 every year. And then he blossomed and just blew up in Detroit. He hit his man years, his prime years with Detroit, and he just took over, won a triple crown. So when you think of Miguel Cabrera, you're obviously going to associate him with the Detroit Tigers, which is fine. Good for him. Like, he earned, like, he had a hell of a career. Are probably the greatest, maybe him and Pujols, you know, the greatest right-handed hitters of all time, you know?
Yeah.
So he's in that conversation for sure. So, you know, but I just give him the edge over Stanton. As Edwin mentioned, one, the health. Was always healthy. Yeah, yeah, you know, people would always, you know, like the weight fluctuation, the jokes, stuff like that, whatever. But he was healthy all the time.
He was playing the eight. What was he? He was playing third. He was playing third base during that run, right? When correct. He first
the whole run,
the whole and run of the 4 years with the Marlins. He was he was in the outfield, but
I take that back. In 2004 and 2005, he still played outfield because they had Mike Lowe still there on the team.
Okay.
Then and they had Conine, Encarnacion, and Cabrera, Pierre. That was like the outfield core. Conine was the backup.
Gotcha. But and still, then 06, what a run.
That's when he went to third base. 06 and 07, he was at third base for those 2 years.
Yeah, so, man. Golly. Yeah. I hadn't really looked at his numbers in a long time till tonight. I hadn't really like dived into those numbers and seen that 4-year run. Like, it's just gross, man. Like, and those years are really absolute. Fun to watch.
You know, those dancing years were dark, depressing years. Yeah. Some of them.
Yeah.
You know, really, like, just like low level type of years. And with Cabrera, at least that 06 year, they were fighting for a wild card spot for almost that whole season with like a pitching rotation of five rookies. Oh no, four rookies and then Dontrell Willis. You know, in the 07, the kind of a similar team. You know, and they were fun. They were young. They had, you know, fun, exciting players to watch in the outfield, you know, as well with, you know, Jeremy Hermida, Josh Willingham. Like, they just had a solid team put together that were fun, that was fun and competitive, unlike the Stanton years where they were in the middling for 60-something wins for a few of those seasons. Yeah. You know, so
head-scratching.
And horrible jerseys. Marlins
I'm sorry, Gabe?
Well, another thing that goes against Stanton is that he played during an era where not only the team was wasting its potential, but they had some really bad jerseys. Like, I was not
those orange.
I was not feeling those jerseys, man.
So that's why I give the edge to Cabrera. Just the years were more competitive, even when they weren't making the playoffs. They were just, so you got to give that edge over him to Stanton, over Stanton, and then, you know, the World Series, and then the impact he just made from just. From this moment he just appeared in a Marlins uniform to his final game. So at the end of the day, guys, all great picks. Can't go wrong with either one. In my opinion, if I were going to rank, as I said, I'll probably put Sheffield, then Cabrera, then Stanton. And the reason why Stanton, even though like he's amazing, he's like, one of the best right-handed power hitters of all time, he already has over 400 home runs in his career. Yep. So like, you know, you can't go wrong with either one, but still, you know, there was no winning. It was depressing. It was sad during those years.
Well, he even said when he went over to the Yankees, he was like, he got tired of the losing for the Marlins.
Yeah.
And that's true words could not have been spoken.
Let me ask you guys, how close were any of you guys to picking a pitcher? Like, did you have a pitcher in your like while you were debating who to pick for
goal? I was pretty close to picking a pitcher.
I had a sleeper pick. I had two sleeper picks, and they were both pitchers. But it was just,
give me some. I want to hear these honorable mentions in these sleepers because I'm curious.
I know,
like, we always sluggers.
I know one of his. For me, my honorable mention is none other than D-Train, Dontrell Willis. There you go.
That was one of my sleeper picks. Yeah.
Yeah, I figured as much. I mean, he's like a favorite.
Why?
Well, for me, it was all about – it wasn't about, like, his unique windup. It wasn't about his stats necessarily. It was just his personality and the way he was on the mound. You guys remember whenever anybody went to that mound to pull him, he would just shake his head up and down, like saying that he was good to go, that you don't have to pull him, that he still has strength left in his arm, you know, energy left in the tank. Bro, he just had that passion that if you would allow him, he will pitch the nine innings every start. It was so hard to pry him off. He just wanted to stay in there. He was so competitive. And you could see it on his face, that energy. It was something like really amazing about him. And another thing about his 2003 season, he won Rookie of the Year. And also, if I'm not mistaken, he also made the All-Star game. So, I mean, in his first year, he got Rookie of the Year, became an All-Star, and won a championship. How many players can you think of that did all that on their first year?
Not
like
many.
Rookie of the Year, All-Star, and a championship.
Small list. Yeah,
very small. Small list. We should do some research and see who else had that fortunate start to their career.
And but that look, was pretty legit, though, with him.
I mean, yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Like, I love Dontrell. He's probably one of my favorite pitchers of all time. Like, it's impossible not to like him. Everything that you said, times a million, you know. But the problem that you can't forget with Dontrell is that man, the fall was hard. The fall was hard for him, and that peak happened early for him when it was with the Marlins, but then he was never anything close to that after he got traded from the Marlins. You know, he had his run, what he played with Cincinnati, Detroit, Arizona. I think the Diamondbacks, he was with them. Yeah, it was tough to watch because he looked like he wasn't enjoying himself. Like, you saw him at his very best with the Marlins, and then everywhere else it was just a fall. So you kind of have to associate that too. Like, It was sad to see him. Like, that one hurt. That one really hurt because you love the guy. And huge D-Train fan. And I'm glad to see that he's on TV and he's doing a bunch of other stuff now post playing career. So he's definitely, he's just a guy that you love him. But we have to associate. You can't forget that fall, man. And it just sucks to see that. But that's also part of, you know, in thinking of that when you're thinking about who these greatest players are. You know what I mean? But I like the Dontrell pick a lot. I like the Dontrell pick a lot.
I was just gonna piggyback off the Dontrell pick. I was just gonna piggyback off that pick real quick and just say, like, the only thing that we can, I guess, follow up with Dontrell is his 2005 year, is when he went 22-10. I think no other Marlins pitcher has replicated a season like this, even though he didn't win Cy
best
Young.
Pitching year.
Carpenter won the Cy Young that year. He came in second. But Dontrell was an All-Star in 2005, and he went 22-10 with a 2.63 ERA. And going back to what Gabe mentioned, I think it's also reflective of the manager he had at the time as well. He had Jack McKean as manager, an old-school baseball guy, you know, kind of from a different mold. He would let guys go, you know, long, you know, and let them pitch. And he had seven complete games in 2005 with five shutouts, 236 innings pitched. So, like, 22-10, sub-3 ERA, five shutouts, seven complete games. No, we're never like, even as dominant as Sandy was his Cy Young year, like in terms of like the stats, it's hard to replicate that. And no Marlins pitcher has. Sandy has been the closest to it. It's still 22 wins.
Single best pitching season ever for a Marlin has to be 05 Dontrelle Willis. That has
and
to
wins
be
isn't the biggest stat for pitchers, but still, though, it's 22 wins, sub 3 ERA, over 250 innings pitched. Like, he put in the work that year, and he did everything he could to try to get that team to the playoffs because they finished with a winning record, but not good enough. But that leads me to my next sleeper pick. That's a pitcher, and I want to get your take on this, guys. Because Dontrelle reminds me of this other sleeper pick that I had, or this honorable mention, and it kind of is a similar career path. So we're going to go back to the 97 team. Dontrelle's from the 03 team. Ooh. I'm going to go with LeVon. LeVon had the potential to be kind of what Dontrelle was, in a sense. Coming up, homegrown type of player, coming up from the system. We found him. This is our guy. And then it just didn't pan out the way. He had that great start to his career in 97. Well, he came up in 96. He had a stint in 96, but he had that incredible run in 97, World Series MVP, and then it just didn't really pan out. They had the fire sale in 98, but I just feel like for pitchers, for this franchise, it's not a long list. So that's why I've had to go to the both championship teams. That's the name that stands out to me. Because then again, you can just throw in, Kevin Brown. But I feel like that's just cheating then, because that's just kind of like, that's just like one, like a cup of coffee with the team. He was like a mercenary, pretty much. He came in, did his job, and then got out, But LeVon, I feel like it kind of has that same attack. Obviously, Dontrelle was better and had a better career with the Marlins and everything, better numbers. But LeVon kind of was going to tiptoes that path. I know LeVon came before Dontrelle, but still, the starting off the careers were very similar, but then it just teetered off, and then the fire sale happened. So, and then LeVon was an average pitcher for the rest of his career. He pitched a long time, but he was
durable,
average at
very
best.
Durable pitcher.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So, but nothing ever really blossomed into like a multi-time All-Star hunting for the Cy Young Award. Nothing really like that. But the potential was there based off the start to his career, the incredible start. Like, it was like a magical ride. His story from Cuba and everything like that. So that's a very sleeper pick. I would put Dontrelle way above LeVon. But like I said, guys, the list for pitchers isn't very long. Like Ricky Nolasco, I think, has the most wins.
Yeah,
no, I think.
Stop. Stop. We're not bringing in Ricky Nolasco on this conversation.
When you're saying like most wins, most wins like in franchise history, Ricky Nolasco's up there. That's what I'm trying to get at. It's that like, We don't have a lot to choose from here, and then I think mentioned earlier in this episode, Jose Fernandez. He in terms of greatest starts, him and Dontrelle are right there. Dontrelle has that World Series, but Jose has like that Rookie of the Year, the multi-time All-Star selections, and then he has that unfortunate passing. But he was up there. He was on his way up to be that front horse, that ace of the team. What Sandy is now. He had the potential.
I'll say this. Jose, I think, had the most complete stuff and was the most dominant of all of the pitchers that we've probably had. Because when you look at his record at home, I think he lost one time in like three seasons because he only pitched 3 years, man. Remember he got hurt. He had Tommy John, so he missed the whole year. And so he was gone for a long time. So we really didn't get much of Jose. But when we did, he was lights out. Legit nastiest stuff, and that's the only time he's been the only guy in the history. Well, him and Dontrelle are the only, funny enough, and it's pitchers. We didn't have it with Stanton during his monster dong season where he was hitting 59 bombs. And remember 97, there was also attendance issues too until the Marlins finally made the playoffs. There was issues there, but the only two people that I've ever seen move the needle and put asses in the seats were Jose Fernandez whenever he pitched on Jose days, and D-Train, man. D-Train, at the old stadium, there was one game, his rookie season against Randy Johnson, where like 40,000 people showed up to watch that because of the two left-handers going at it. And he was a rookie, bro. Like, people were paid to see that guy pitch. Those guys moved the needle. But LeVon had that small little window. A guy who I kind of put in the same category, but maybe had a little more success. Well, he obviously had more success as a Marlin overall, but was kind of in that same little category where he didn't get too much out of him, a little lost. But Josh Johnson, man, I got to give Josh Johnson an honorable mention here. Josh Johnson was a two-time All-Star. He was top five in Cy Young 1 year, had a 2.30 ERA, led the league in that. He had a nice little run there. 15-5 and 11-6 on some bad Marlins teams, right? Those two seasons, and then just, man, fell off completely. But that guy was going to be that man. He was going to be that dude. But, you know, injuries or whatnot definitely derailed him. So, but he had some good stuff. Like, he had
Roy Halladay and him going at it for his perfect game. Roy Halladay's, you know, like, he lost 1-0, and Josh Johnson was the losing pitcher. And he was, they were going
to have a great game.
Great
game. So, I like Josh Johnson there, but I do think Levon, again, obviously, I love you, Miami, and, you know, his pictures at the stadium and everything, but I see that. My honorable mention was actually straying away from the pitcher. I tried to find somebody, but then I realized, bro, there's a guy who, let me tell you, let me pull it up here. Eight seasons, I think he played with the Marlins. You guys probably gonna know. It's 7 years.
I'm starting to be curious about this.
7 years with the Marlins, right? But this guy, bro, this guy personified being a Marlin. Let me look it up here. Won a gold glove with the Marlins, went to 3 All-Star games as a Marlin, and he wasn't a very glamorous guy. It wasn't a guy who, you know, like, led the league in a lot of stuff, but damn, bro, was he a good ball player. 2-time World Series champion, bro. Talking about the guy, the one and only FIU legend, bro. Mike Lowell, baby. That guy, Lowell, seriously, I had him fighting for that one spot for me, bro. Like, it was between him.
Forget the hidden ball trick that he pulled off.
The hidden ball trick. The fact that he was just, man, what was, let me see. Can I find that season? There was one year where he was killing it. He was, 32 home runs, 105.
He got hurt.
32 home.
He got hit in the eye, getting a foul ball. And that's the reason why they called up Cabrera, because of the eye injury.
Exactly, bro. So because of him, we get Cabrera. They got to add extra points for that. You know, he won a gold glove.
I'll allow it. I'll allow it.
There you go. So it's the guy's a beast, Mike Lowell. There's the local ties to him. Like, if you're doing a Mount Rushmore of... Yeah, what?
Cavalier.
Yeah, he's from Coral Gables Senior High, man. From my high school.
Oh, okay. There you go.
I went to the same high school as him and to the same university as him.
Look at that, bro. So I'm telling you, man, and I think when you do a Mount Rushmore or Mount Five More, how we like to call it on Lemon City, because we like to add that extra spot in there, you definitely have to have a real discussion about putting him up there. Like, he's in the discussion. Does he make the list? That's up for debate. You know, I don't want to make that list right now, but that's for another show. But he's got to be in the discussion, because he's in this discussion as the GOAT guy. But, man, I'm telling you, bro, he's just a guy you love, bro. Guy you love, never did a bad thing, you know, never. And is all Miami. And you saw how valuable he was in what year was it? 2008, when the Red Sox went to the World Series and they, you know, won that second chip for them. He was the MVP of the World Series. So, Mike Lowell, bro.
He had some years with the Red Sox, monster. For sure. Yeah. And he had kind of like a renaissance to his career, because he was already kind of at 05 year. With the Marlins was his worst year with the Marlins. The power fell off the map from 03 to 04. The power just completely went away. He wasn't getting on base. He wasn't hitting like for average. It was just like a big
glove was there.
His glove was still there. And so that's why he wasn't DH'd at all with the Red Sox, even though that's kind of where your career kind of heads to. And he was incredible. His kind of a second life to his career, had hit a lot of doubles. I think it was 1 year over 40 doubles or something like that, or led the MLB in doubles.
47,
and he was a postseason hero for them. So he just, you know, he never really got hurt either with the Marlins, just that weird eye injury and stuff like that. Like, you know, so that's a great pick, Edwin. That's an awesome pick. Mike Lowell, he was that, he came in that next wave after the fire cell 97. There's a lot of guys that come from that 97 fire cell who had the potential to be that GOAT for this franchise. Either one, their career never blossomed to that expectation, or two, the next fire cell got to them to not establish that career or to establish that longevity with the team. So, guys come to mind, like, I'm not like, these are very, very sleeper picks, but just harping off that, you know, 97, 98 fire cell transitioning into the next wave of talent. You have Mike Lowell, you have Derek Lee, you have Alex Gonzalez. These guys are just the names that are coming off that wave of trades from the 98 fire sale. But, you know, Derek Lee, look at the career that he had. Great career, especially in those Chicago years. That potentially could have happened with Miami.
Yeah, I love Derek Lee.
And that great glove was awesome,
bro.
So, you know, and Carlos Delgado, you know, if he just stayed that 05 to 08, 09 stretch, because he was with New York after 05. Though that 4-year stretch, if you put 05 with his Mets tenure, that's probably one of the greatest Marlins first baseman stretches of all time. You know, like I'm saying, these fire sales are killing the potential of having like who is a GOAT, you know, for this franchise conversation or per position. Like I just said, Carlos Delgado could have, if he just stayed his 4-year contract with the Marlins, if he just did it and he performed the way he did, he could have been like the greatest first baseman in Marlins history. So stuff like that gets in the way of a lot of these players. Luis Castillo is another one, just of his longevity. He was part of both World Series teams, you know. So it's just a lot. These are just names that you just throw up in the air now. I think we kind of gone over already the main names, hitters and pitchers. Like I said, the list isn't very long. It's been so a young franchise, and these fire sales are just killing it.
I do want to give a shout out to Hanley for, you know, I know we're shitting on him here. Like, how dare he be the guy, you know? Picked him. Yeah, I don't think he's the guy.
I was going to round up the episode like that to kind of like, let's talk about his numbers, but let's do it now. Let's go into his career with the Marlins.
Because he, and funny enough, like looking when I saw the graphic and I was like, oh man, let me look into this. And I started, there was two things that I noticed. One, Hanley did have a pretty good run with us, you know, like obviously I knew that, but I think that the bad outshines the good for me. And we'll talk about it in a second. But the other thing that I noticed that I was really surprised, and I was looking, I was like, well, when I was looking at pitchers, I was looking at Sandy's numbers. Sandy's numbers are not that great, bro. Like, which kind of has me a little worried because he had the Cy Young season 2 years ago, 14-9. But other than that, he's had a losing record pretty much every season that he's been in the big leagues.
And that he's
been with the Marlins. And his ERA has always been above 3. You know, he's hasn't had a sub 3. And last season is 7-12 with the shift, you know, being banned in baseball. Like, it really affected his performance. And now he's, you know, coming back from Tommy John. Man, I'm very, very worried about, you know, where we are with Sandy. Which Sandy are we going to get back? Are we going to get the 7-12 or the 14-9 guy? But anyway, those are my two things that I took away from when I was researching that were really surprising. But yeah, man, Hanley, dude, like, he was not a bad player, man. Like, again, we kind of poo-pooing on him, you know, and rightfully so. But let me see. I had it here. 3-time All-Star as a Marlin, right?
Yes.
3-time All-Star as a Marlin. Yeah. And Rookie of the Year, won a batting title. 342, man. That's, and then he batted 332, 301, 300, and then the 342 season. So he was good. I feel like when we look back at Hanley, like we look at it in a negative light. I mean, was it that bad? Like, did the off field or this, like, you know, his personality, like, what was it? What was it that turned people off?
Here's the thing that comes to mind with Hanley. One, the kickball incident under Freddie Gonzalez was the manager at the time.
Yep.
That's minute, I think. Also, the transition from going to shortstop to third base, he did not embrace it. He was very fake about it. Jose Reyes came to Miami, and the new season with a new team, new name, new stadium, everything. Jose Reyes was going to be the shortstop. Hanley Ramirez was going to go from shortstop to third base. Hanley was never the greatest glove at all at shortstop. He was already getting bigger. He was a big shortstop. He was, you know, and he was more suitable for, heck, even going to play left field or first base or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
But shortstop it was very clear that he was – you know, he was getting older, and shortstop was not going to be his position much longer, especially with Jose Reyes, the way better glove, quicker, just better fielder overall. He was terrible at third base. His tenure with the Marlins ended bad, injuries. His lone season or his half a season as a Miami Marlin when they transitioned was awful. His last couple years of his tenure with the Marlins were just injury filled and just a lot of negativity, you know, and the whole kickball incident kind of just was the beginning of the end, I feel like, for Hanley and his time with Miami.
Yeah.
And that's why I feel like, you know, the recency, I guess, of it, the beginning of, like, that was the ending of his tenure. And it was what the, you know, first thing we think of, the most recent thing. So, but no, you know, obviously, like, he was a Rookie of the Year, and he came from that Mike Lowell trade for Boston and getting Anibal Sanchez as well. It was a good trade actually for both teams, but, you know,
not a great trade.
So Hanley Ramirez had the numbers, and then teams were somewhat competitive. You know, like they had that infield with of going 20 over 25 home runs with Jorge Cantu, Hanley, Dan Uggla, and Mike Jacobs. You know, so they had fun, exciting teams. You know, Chris Coughlin was on that 2009 team with Hanley was there as well, and I think Hanley won a batting title that year. And then, Silver Slugger, excuse me, in 2009, and then Chris Coughlin was Rookie of the Year, and Hanley hit 342. So like, but then it just kind of went to the crapper after Miami or Florida, I guess. I'm looking at his numbers.
I mean, he had one good season with the Red Sox in 2016. I think I just had it here: 30 home runs, 111 RBIs, and 286. He did bat 320 another year, but that was in 133 games. I mean, that's still
And he hit 345 with LA, and with LA in 2013, but only
386 games.
Yeah, 86 games. Yeah. So 3-4. Yeah. So like I said, the injury started at the end of his Marlins tenure, and then if you look at his numbers, games played after in LA and in Boston, he didn't even get to 130 games. Yeah. You know, in any of season. So
it sucked, man.
Oh no, I'm sorry.
Well, he had talent, man.
You know, in 2016, 2017, excuse me, he did pass 130 games, but then again, he was playing for Boston. He was DHing.
Yeah.
He was DHing already, you know, and he was playing first base. Like it was a different type of Hanley Ramirez. He was more of a power guy, you know, and stuff. But the talent was there, but I just feel like he had the makings of a Hall of Fame career at the beginning of it, for sure. Will say this looking at his numbers, for sure. It just, the attitude, I think maybe the work ethic. I'm not going to talk about his work ethic, but I just feel like it just, the way his career turned out, I feel like you can see he wasn't taking care of himself, you know, and it just
I'm curious to see Gabe. Gabe's got the silent, you know, thoughtful look right now. What's going through your head, Gabe?
What's your handling take?
Is a perfect example of it's not how you start, it's how you finish. He had a really good start to the season here, you know, and for me, it was all for me, what knocked it out from, you know, agreeing with the choice of making him the GOAT was how he was doing off the field and how bad he was at third base. And I don't know, man, after that 345 year with the Dodgers, I think it was all downhill from there. He just couldn't stay healthy. Which reminds me of a certain other person that we've been discussing in Stanton. But, you know, I just wish that it ended differently with him. Had he had a better departure from us, had the certain things gone his way, had he stayed healthy, even after the Marlins, had he stayed healthy, I think I would have had a much more positive outlook with him. But the way that things ended, I guess that's like the more recent memory, like how you guys brought up. But if I had to put him in like the candidates list for GOAT, he would still make my top 10. He just wouldn't be like in the top 5.
Sure, top 10.
I just couldn't put him there.
Simply Edwin, what's your take here with Hanley?
I feel I look at Hanley and there's a lot of, you know, what ifs with Hanley. That's unfortunate. And it's not the what ifs as much of because he got injured. Like, I look at Stanton, well, what if he hadn't gotten hit in the face? You know, how would that season finish? What if, you know, this guy hadn't gotten hurt as much? No. When I look at him, it's the wrong what ifs. Like it's the what ifs that could have been prevented. You know, like, what if he had a better attitude? What if he was, you know, a little easier to coach? What if he didn't, you know, resist as much? And maybe what if he was a little better teammate? What if he was a little better team player? And maybe he was. And maybe he did try, you know what I'm saying? But the way it came off to everybody that's outside of the locker room, you know, it didn't come off like that. It came off like he was, you know, stubborn and, you know, hard-headed, and that it showed in his performance. So when I look at Hanley, I probably say he might crack the top 5, maybe, you know, if I really dissect it, because of he did have some great numbers and a great start, you know, to his tenure as a Marlin. But I'd say he's probably
part of what makes a good player is attitude, and he just didn't have it. He just didn't adapt well to the changing situation, I get it. Ew. And like you said, he might have tried, but I feel attitude plays a lot into it. Like, I'll give you the example with Dontrell Willis. There you go. When there was adversity, Dontrell Willis never shied away from it. stayed at it, kept going. Yeah, his star burned really quickly, and he had a hard fall. But still, I mean, it's all about attitude, how you handle adversity. And he was really bad at third base. Like, oh, really bad. Yeah. And like I said, it's not how you start, it's how you finish for me. So, and attitude really – he was off-putting, to be honest. Like, I'm going to be really honest with you. He's a
great but Barry Bonds player. Barry Bonds was a jerk for the most of his career, and he was, you know, still did everything he needed to do. You can be a jerk, or you could be unlikable, but you could still produce and be a good player. You know what I mean?
But that's just like it. The health got in the way, and he stopped producing because look at how he performed at third base. It's like what, two negatives don't make a positive. No, but I hear what you're saying. Yeah. Barry Bonds is the perfect example that as long as you produce, you can have any kind of attitude you want. But Hanley didn't have that circumstance.
I guess. Just to round things off here, and I love this up. This has been a really fun episode, guys. But I guess just to round things off here with Hanley Ramirez, and what I guess trying to view what FanDuel, I guess, was viewing is let's break it down here, guys. Baseball Reference says Hanley Ramirez played for the Marlins for 7 years, from 2006 to 2012. But let's go into that start of his career, as Gabe mentioned, 2006 to 2010, that 5 year stretch. Now, let's look at that five-year stretch real closely here and then compare to the guys that we mentioned. And Cabrera has 4.5 years per se. Sheffield has, I think, a little over 5 years. Stanton, well over 5 years. So I guess that's where FanDuel was looked at, is that the sample size in that stretch of time. 2011, injury-riddled season. Hit below 250, I think only 10 home runs, whatever. 2012, transition to third base, terrible defensively. Injury riddled as well, traded to LA in a fire sale. That was it. So like the ending was bad. But 2006, 2010, it's filled with a couple of all-star appearances, a couple of silver sluggers, a rookie of the year, a 30-30 season. You know, he had the 30-30 potential. And then things just never materialized after his post-Marlins career. But I guess I will put Hanley then in this Mount Rushmore, Mount Fivemore in terms of Marlins. Yeah. Because of this that 5 year stretch, so I will put him in that category. Then looking really closely again at that stretch of time, but then he falls into that Stanton category though because there was no winning involved. There was there was just a lot of at least there was competitive base. So there was the baseball was more competitive during that stretch of time in Marlins history compared to the Stanton tenure. Yeah. So he does enter that conversation, but still I'm gonna go with Sheffield or Cabrera. In that for the to replace Hanley in that FanDuel graphic. So final thoughts here, gentlemen, Edwin, Gabe, rounding things off here for episode 5 of First Pitch 305. Edwin, I'll start with you.
No, I think we did a great job. I know we're up against the clock here, but I think we did a great job. Yeah. I don't think we left anybody out that needed to be in this conversation. I think we definitely covered all our bases to stay with the baseball terminology here. But I think we did a great job, and I'm looking forward to the next discussion and the next little, Mount Five More debate.
Gabe.
I'm always down for another Mount Five More debate, especially on who makes the cut, like who's the fourth and the fifth, because a lot of us – Like me, I wouldn't have Hanley Ramirez in the top five. I'd probably have him at sixth or seventh. And I know at least one of you would. And, it just depends what we put as the Mount Five More. Because for me, it's about it's not just stats. For me, it's like personality. How was the player in and out of the field or on and off the field? How they were in the locker room and stuff like that. Especially lately, because as we've heard from current events, whether or not a player fits in or there's chemistry or there's toxicity in the ball club, that affects how a player produces. It affects how a team produces. Hanley Ramirez is a good example. He didn't adapt well to third base.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll discuss more about that.
It's a season that's really forgettable. So,
We'll talk more about that, but I appreciate you guys for coming on for this episode. That's Gabriel Garcia. That's Edwin Garcia. And I'm Alex Aguirre. And remember, guys, let's go fish.